The Blue Cliff Record, Case 98, Tempio's Two Wrongs. Introduction. For the whole summer, I've been loquaciously creating entanglements. I have confused almost all the monks of the Five Lakes. But when the diamond sword cuts right through, I realize for the first time it's all been totally in vain. Just say, what is the diamond sword? Lift up your eyebrows. To test, I will expose the tip for you. Look. The case. Tempio visited Sien while on pilgrimage. He was always saying, don't say you've understood Buddhism. There's no one who can make a mando with me and examine me. One day, Sien saw him at a distance and called to him. Come here, Tempio. Tempio raised his head. Sien said, wrong. Tempio went on for two or three steps. Sien again said, wrong. Tempio turned and came closer. Sien said, I've just said wrong twice. Is it I am who wrong, or is it you? Tempio said, it is I. Sien said, wrong. Tempio was silent. Sien said, stay here for the summer retreat, and I'll examine this matter of two wrongs with you. Tempio, however, departed. Years later, when Tempio himself became an abbot, he addressed his assembly and said, once in my days of pilgrimage, I visited Sien by chance, and twice he said wrong. He advised me to stay with him for the summer retreat to examine this matter of two wrongs with him. I don't say I was wrong then, but when I left for the south, I realized for the first time I had completed saying wrong. In the verse, those of the Zen family stream love to skim along. Coming to practice with a full belly will be of no use. It's most sad, it's most laughable, old Tempio. On the other hand, it was regrettable I went on pilgrimage at that time. Wrong, wrong. Sien's clear wind immediately dies away. Say it again. A patched road monk should suddenly appear and say wrong. Is Secho's wrong the same as Tempio's wrong? Now this translation comes from an unpublished set of commentaries by Yamada Roshi that are available online at the at senbozen.org for a membership fee. But they really represent right now just about the only contemporary teachers' commentaries on the Blue Cliff Record that are available. When we went through these cases in our discussion groups some years ago, we used the version called Secrets of the Blue Cliff Record, which has the commentaries of Rinzai teacher Hakuin and the Soto teacher Tenkei. But these commentaries are hundreds of years old. And so it's interesting to have Yamada's relatively contemporary translation and comments. And he's very good at spelling out a lot of what would otherwise be rather obscure references and imagery. So I think it's worth taking a look at, and probably over the coming year or so, I will revisit his collection and use it for teishos during Sesshin. In the case, Tempio is presented as someone who's had some experience of Zen, but thinks he's gained or accomplished something thereby. He's going around and saying, daring anyone to challenge him, saying nobody is able to defeat him in Mondo and Zen combat. And so we have him presented as someone who at some level is sort of saying, I've got it, right? And he bumps up against a real master in Cyan who, whatever he does, Cyan says, wrong. He calls his name. And Tempio stops and turns around. He said, wrong. He steps forward, says, wrong. He stands still, he says, wrong, right? Suddenly this person who thinks he has all the answers can't do anything right. But what is he doing wrong? His name is called, and he looks up and answers, how is that wrong? Where's his error? What's being pointed at here is that he's stuck in a kind of dichotomy where we still have an opposition of wrong and right, as if the opposite of wrong is to be right, rather than somehow do away with that distinction altogether. It's like the case of Mu, where Mu literally means no. Does the dog have a Buddha nature or not? No. But that no is not a negation of the dog's Buddha nature, as if it's the opposite of yes. It's a negation of the whole question of have or have not. So Cyan is trying to say, wrong, wrong, the whole idea of distinguishing between have and have not is the problem. We get a hint about this in the introduction to the case where the comment says, all summer I've been loquaciously creating entanglements and confused all the monks. So you hear I think this is Secho's comment on the case. He's basically saying, to speak at all about this is to create entanglements, is to create confusion. I've confused everybody by acting as if there's something to get. as if there's something to understand. I should have just kept my mouth shut, right? But that's the paradox of this. That in order to teach, in order to say anything, in order to do anything, we have to allow ourselves to be wrong. We have to step out of the absolute, step out of pristine silence, and into words and concepts and into actions. Anytime we do that, we can be accused of being wrong. We can imagine that all we should do is shut up, sit in Zazen, face the wall like Bodhidharma, never say anything. But of what use is that to anyone else if they don't understand what we're doing? So teachers inevitably say that in order to engage with people, we have to step out of any kind of noble silence, get down into the mud, get down into the weeds of words and comments, and allow ourselves to be wrong. We have to answer when called. We have to take two steps forward or two steps back. We have to do something. Now, I would take this even further and say that everybody comes to practice thinking that there's something wrong with them individually, that there's some deficit, some delusion, some lack, something that needs to be filled in or fixed. Something that's wrong now that they want to try to make right. Or there's a sense that even life as it is, because of our mortality, because of our vulnerability, our need for other people, has built into it something that's basically wrong, that leads us to death and suffering. And we look to practice as a way to get in touch with a higher realm that's in some way beyond that kind of transience and vulnerability, into something that's eternal or permanent, spiritual rather than physical and mortal. So much of religious practice seems like an attempt to guarantee a place for us in another life, in another world, in another realm, beyond this one, which has so much wrong with it. So this koan points to a whole different way of thinking about how is that kind of wrong going to be righted? What would that ever mean? You see, the wrong of impermanence or vulnerability or suffering is not made right by somehow discovering its opposite, a permanence or autonomy or invulnerability or transcendence. We could say that these are wrongs that don't have an opposite, or a right that doesn't have an opposite. What we do when we sit is leave our usual mode of fault and fixing, of deficit and repair, of lack and gain. All our usual activity is about trying to get from here to there. This isn't it. We're trying to get in. Maybe sometimes, like Tempio, we feel like, I've got it. But then that sense of getting it is constantly under assault from the real world. It's always changing. It's always reminding us of our vulnerability. And whatever state we think we've attained, one way or another, sooner or later, we find out we can't hold on to it. It's always slipping away. So what do we do in our zazen? We just sit. And in that just sitting, we enter a place that's neither right nor wrong. One of the things I've said about zazen is it's sort of one thing that you can't do wrong is you're just being present. You just show up to the moment, experience whatever it is, what's ever happening. As long as you're present, you can't do it right or wrong. It's off that grid. Now, it's not to say at some level you can't fail to do zazen in the sense that if you sit down on your cushion but are checking your phone every 5 minutes or have earplugs in and are listening to music while you sit, it's not that you're doing it wrong, it's just you're not doing it at all, right? So you're not finding how to sit down and create this space where nothing's happening. You're still caught up in trying to make something happen, trying to get from here to there. But even if we sit down and watch ourselves engaged in that, if we bring a mindfulness to just observing our habitual ways of doing things without any notion of fixing them, then they're just dharmas. They're just what's happening moment after moment. And we're able to leave ourselves alone, even though what we're doing moment after moment is wrong, wrong, wrong. It's not something we have to escape. It simply is our life.